Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, April 27th. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, Kelly.
Glad to have you with me as always. And also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Mr. Martellaro.
Hey.
I just found out I've been mispronouncing John's last name for 20 years, and I'm mortified.
There's an alternate pronunciation that's very acceptable.
The alternate, man, your name is your name. I gotta honor your name. From now on, I will dedicate the rest of my life to properly honoring your name.
The next 20 years?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't get a lot of exercise. I don't see that happening. Anyway, let's go.
Welcome to Life, the Universe, and Everything, this week's today's episode of Daily Observations. Yeah. We're actually here to talk about a story that continues to sort of not quite go away. Zombie is an awfully strong word, but it leaves for a while and it just keeps coming back. It sounds familiar. There's a word for this that I can't quite put my finger on. The story that we're talking about here is Apple releasing its own processors for Macs. We know that they do this for the phones, but this is something that we're now hearing from a Reuters report, Reuters and Bloomberg, that Charlotte wrote up on Friday, talking about the device.
It's actually just Bloomberg.
Oh, just Bloomberg. Okay.
It's just Bloomberg.
It's this story is that this device will go on sale next year in 2021. I think the last wave of this we heard was 2022, if I'm not mistaken. But
well, we've heard lots of years.
That's
and,
true.
And I don't consider this so much a zombie story as a story that clearly has, you know, a forest burning behind the smoke, and you know, we keep catching glances.
Okay. No if, just when
of this story.
At this point, the quibble is the timeline.
I think so. I've been on board the Apple moving to its own processor story for a while now. There's just too much about it that makes sense.
I agree, John. You're generally my go-to person to talk about processors. What's your take on this?
Yeah, let's set the stage here, kind of lay out the landscape. So Apple is reportedly rumored to be working on ARM processors, as you said, the kind they use in the iPads and the iPhones, for the Mac. Now, this kind of winds people up because they think that all of a sudden, with a different instruction set, they're going to instantly lose Windows compatibility, and it's going to be the end of the Mac and Sturm und Drang. I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe that, one, the ARM processor with the Firestorm and the iStorm chips and, you know, a monster number of cores, 12 cores, maybe eventually 8 cores to start, can easily do instruction set emulation, the kind that we saw in Rosetta when we made the transition from PowerPC to Intel. So we've got instruction set capability. I'm sure it will be built in. Apple wouldn't make this move if all of a sudden people couldn't run Windows on their Macs. The Mac is a great machine to run Windows on, whether you're doing it natively in a boot camp or whether you're doing it in virtual machine mode. Speaking of virtual machines, which nobody ever talks about in these articles, and I wish they would, it's probably because that information is being held even more tightly. A long time ago, somebody I respect told me that it's not very hard for Apple to include virtual machine hardware in these A chips so that you could run Parallels, a new version of Parallels, in which you would be running Windows 10 with instruction set emulation on a virtual machine on your A14. So that solves a lot of problems for a lot of people. And I don't think Apple would proceed unless they solve that problem. And that's probably why it's taking so long, is to nail that technology down. It's a simple case of, you know, running Mac OS on ARM and forsaking everything else and abandoning Windows just isn't going to happen with Apple. So you can mark the date I said that and hold me to it, and I'll buy you dinner if I'm wrong. Both of you.
I think for me, part of the reason that I think this story, not not continues to make the rounds, but continues not to end up being reality, is the amount of work that goes into making that transition smooth. And the last time we had this transition, Apple was under a very different release schedule for operating systems. And at that point, there wasn't a whole lot of iOS work to be doing when we went to Intel, like Intel Mac Minis and that sort of thing. And also, at that point, the operating system for the Mac came out when Apple was ready to release a new version of the operating system. It wasn't every September like it is now.
The other thing I like about this story at Bloomberg is that TSMC in Taiwan has been doing a fabulous job in reducing the processor scale down to 5 nanometers, the processor. The process size, that's the basically the size of the transistors, euphemistically in a rough kind of way. Mm-hmm. Whereas, as we know, Intel had a really tough time getting down to 10 nanometers with Cannon Lake, and they had to abandon Cannon Lake and go to a whole new system of processors, and now they're down to 10. But TSMC has been embarrassing Intel, and with 8 cores and 5 nanometers, and Apple having control over the architecture, it's really kind of an embarrassment to Intel. Intel couldn't deliver what Apple needed, or wouldn't. And so, according to the Bloomberg article, Intel's stocks took a little bit of a hit last week when this article came out. Interesting. I don't know that it's going to hurt Intel financially too badly, because 95% of the chips go into PCs and Linux boxes. But it is kind of a pride thing.
Yeah, it'll depend on the kind of performance that Apple can deliver. What Intel risks losing is the perceived value battle.
Yeah,
and that, I mean, and they're already, in my opinion, they're already struggling on that with AMD. The AMD appears to be constantly out delivering Intel in terms of power, and of course the TSMC. And I want to say Samsung both have been beating Apple on the, excuse me, beating Intel on the size power, on the size battle. So, you know, these things are really pulling away Intel's shroud of supremacy.
Not to mention the fact that Apple wants to get away from the Intel modem that they use in their phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's only because the Intel modem isn't great, which is a problem in and of itself. It's not that they don't want to be, like, I think that Apple would probably never have headed down this path if Intel could have delivered the kind of processors that Apple wanted. Apple is obsessed with eliminating electricity consumption, that kind of power consumption, mm-hmm. while delivering acceptable performance power, the other kind of power. And Intel has not been as very focused on the electricity consumption aspect of the processor world for a very, very long time. And Apple has done a whole lot to basically work around that, including using a lot of their own circuitry that allows Apple to take, you know, like, massively micromanagement control over when its devices are consuming power, but being able to move to its own processor on the Mac line, like it has on its iOS and iPadOS lines, will mean that Apple can take even more control over that.
Right.
And that I believe is what is driving all this. It's not just Apple's penchant for control, because I think, I don't really think that has ever driven Tim Cook as much as it did Steve Jobs.
I would agree with that.
It does drive Tim Cook, but I don't think it drives Tim Cook as much. But the reality is that there is a whole lot that Apple can do by controlling this process, by controlling its own processors. And the question will be whether or not they can deliver the power. And if they can deliver the power, it's going to be a huge win for Apple.
Mm-hmm. And I think, to your point of perceived value, you know, John was talking about how this wouldn't really hurt Intel because that's not where the bulk of their chips are going. but it would absolutely hurt Intel, I think, because they're a publicly traded company. And if the public perception is that they can't cut it with Apple, which is another company that the stock market holds in a certain regard, then I think there's a lot more there's a lot more effects to that than just Intel only sells 3% of their processors to Apple. And so now that's 3% of their sales that are going away because they're not selling them to Apple anymore. I think it's a lot more than that. It's the face issue, like them having to kind of save face because Intel's whooping them on one side and Apple gave up on them entirely on the other. Like, that's going to turn into a longer term problem, I think, for Intel.
I think there's a security issue here, and I don't see that discussed very often, but I have a suspicion, it's just a John Martellaro hunch, that Apple is constructing their chips in such a way that they don't have to worry about the Spectre and the Meltdown pipeline errors that Intel has not been able to completely deal with.
I can see that.
And if Apple could get rid of Spectre and Meltdown and have really, really fast chips, because, you know, I think there's patches to Spectre and Meltdown now that slow the processor down. Mm-hmm. And Apple doesn't like that. So,
well, it would probably be easier too if Apple controlled the chip and didn't have to spend so much time engineering around it, like Brian, like you were saying.
Yeah, like for sure.
It doesn't have as much to do with, like, we want control of it as much as we have to do all this other work to work around whatever it is that Intel's doing. And if we were making that chip, then we wouldn't have to do that anymore. Because it doesn't seem like Intel's really teaming up with Apple on this, you know, like, in order to improve anything. Like, Intel's just putting chips out there, and if Apple wants them, then they're Apple's, then Apple can use them. So
the other thing that I want the listeners to be aware of is another John Martellaro crackpot theory, and this is derived from Jason Snell, who first brought it up, is mm-hmm. that, and I believe him, is that Apple is not going to convert the entire line from Intel to ARM, especially the Mac Pro, whether you got the powerful Xeon processors. So what we're going to see, I think we're going to see some experimental machines rolled out. I've seen one notion that it's going to be a new model. Instead of a new MacBook Air with an ARM, we're going to have something called an iBook. Anybody ever heard of that?
That sounds like a goofy name. Apple would never do anything like that.
No. And so you'll be able to choose.
I don't like this at all, man. Apple is not going back to the i thing. They've been working to get rid of the i for years.
I know, but it's a placeholder. I think Apple needs to sort of brand their ARM chips in a sort of unique way, because otherwise it would be confusing.
Yeah.
But the MacBook Air, I need to order it with ARM or order it with Intel. Which do I order? What do I do? What do I do?
Well, I think for that reason, actually, that's the argument against Apple bifurcating its line. I think that what will start with a MacBook of some sort or a mm-hmm. portable laptop of some sort with Mac in the name is going to end up permeating the line. And that would eventually include the Mac Pro.
That could happen too.
You throw enough cores at something.
It doesn't matter so much where they come from.
But the argument that they are not going to do it all at once and with a lot of energy is that if for some reason ARM MacBook Airs don't take off or there's technical difficulties, they can let the line linger like they did with the MacBook and say, well, it was a grand experiment. It failed.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they absolutely and positively will not, could not, should not do it all at once.
No,
and there's never been any kind of rumor along those lines. I did argue incorrectly, I might add, that the Mac Pro could end up being the first device that had its own processors because we were looking at rumors of the Mac Pro coming out. That obviously was incorrect, but it's going to start somewhere and then it's going to permeate outwards unless it's a complete catastrophe.
Right. And it's going to be something that's not the primary machine, right? Like, it's not going to be the 13-inch MacBook Pro where this starts, right? Just like the keyboard. They're not going to do it all at once, which they didn't do last time. We didn't get Intel laptops until a little bit later, I think, too. So it's going to definitely be a phased rollout, and I'm interested to see where that ends up going.
A long time ago. It was 2006 and 7.
Yeah. That's why it's a little hazy in my mind. that I don't remember.
The other thing that people worry about is whether this movement to ARM means that there's going to be a blurring between the iPad Pro and the Macs, and whether there's going to be simply, you know, more coherence in the
going
ARM-based operating systems, or whether there's going to be a blurring of the product lines down the road, or whether it opens doors for Apple. How that pans out is not quite sure. But what I can tell you is that the Mac's going to be around for a while, so I wouldn't worry too much.
Well, I disagree with the premise of that argument in the first place, because I can hook an external monitor and a keyboard and a trackpad to an iPad Pro right now.
Just and saying. It's still not as good of a multitasking device as a Mac.
Yeah, no, it's
right.
not.
That's right.
But if you want to talk about blurring a line, there's a line that's blurry. It shouldn't be, but it is.
People just leap to conclusion that the obvious, and like Arthur Clarke said, the obvious and simple solution to a question is usually wrong.
I can get behind that. But
yeah. I think it allows Apple more opportunities for, as we just said, control, speed, mm-hmm. power, battery life, operating system, coherence,
and
crosstalk.
Honestly, I kind of want to see where Apple goes with this. You know, we've talked before about, you know, Apple, but in the before times, you know, Apple was a company that could sort of sit around and go, you know, it would be great. It would be really great if we could do this, you know, on a Mac, and then they go and build it. And watching them have to compete is the part that I think is pretty interesting. So watching Apple compete on a processor level and be able to put some engineering behind it and put something into building exactly what they want it to be instead of having to build around what it is that they already have, I think is going to be an interesting thing to watch, especially because I get to talk to the two of you about it.
Fair enough.
That's just my theory, though. That's actually going to do it for us today. Brian, do you have any final thoughts on this?
No, I look forward to this transition. Assuming Apple can deliver that, I have faith, I suppose, that Apple can deliver the kind of power that we want. Oh, we should also mention, by the way, that it's supposed to be based on the A14, which doesn't exist yet. The A14 would theoretically be the processor in the next generation of iPhone. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, and a lot remains to be seen on what Apple actually does with the A14. I mean, it's just it surely won't be the iPhone's processor stuck into a Mac. Surely it will at the very least be something like the, you know, A14M as opposed to X,
exactly,
or A14D for desktop or something like that. And so, you know, I look forward to seeing what they do, and I look forward to seeing what kind of effect it has on Apple's costs, because not paying Intel in Intel's margins could mean that Apple actually is able to lower its cost in order to, you know, achieve the gross margin goals that it has.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, yeah, power, I look forward to seeing everything that's happening, but I have faith that Apple is going to do this correctly.
I do, too.
All right. Well, when they actually do it, we will definitely be here to talk about it, because I'm an optimist like that. So thank you both for being here to talk to me about it today. John Martellaro, thank you so much for coming by.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Always with me, Brian Chaffin. Glad to have you with me.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Was good. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. Be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.